broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And good evening. Welcome to the show, folks.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. You know, any Friday night is a great night to be at Ted's of Beverly Hills, but this is this isn't a Friday night. It feels like it, though. It's a Tuesday night, 4th of July tomorrow night, and the best of Ted. The best of Ted Bell is there in the shop, right, Phil?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, We're rolling out the best of Ted Bell over this, 4th of July holiday, whether you're taking the end of the week off or you're taking off the early part of the week. Welcome to our show. And there's a lot of very interesting tracks on this best of Ted Bell download, Ted, that we want to talk about. We also want to discuss with you what you've got planned for the 4th of July weekend. This is the segment brought to you in part, folks, by Ted's of Beverly Hills. Also, that jingle is available, isn't that right?
Yeah, that is absolutely right. And the reason why we're making the Ted's of Beverly Hills jingle available to people is because a lot of people have asked us about it. And they've asked us, they've said, you know, we like it. We understand that you've had to deal with a lot of people who want to make it into something that's dirty. There's nothing dirty about it. We do. We want to put our meat, you know, where we say that we want to put it.
But don't you think that sort of invites?
No, I don't. You and I have had this discussion.
All right, okay, never mind. You know,
we've had this discussion. I think if you think in a juvenile way, I think if you think like a child, then obviously it does invite, as you say, that kind of filth, which is what I consider. But no, if you listen to this jingle, this is one that we put together with Walcott and Brewster, which is an advertising agency in New York. And that's Candy Swenson, I think, who's singing it. And by the way, we have our prime rib will be slow cooked all day tomorrow on the 4th of July. So you've got a great 4th of July prime rib dinner come out in Ted's Beverly Hills.
Here at Ted's.
Here it is.
We want to put our meat in your mouth.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so I'm just saying that was a controversial part of it, but it is available on the Best of Ted Bell download that's up at our in our shop at philhendryshow.com.
Yeah, and we do want people to, I think you were talking with Neil about turning it into a ringtone. I like that idea. I want to know how the money situation is going to work with that.
Well, you had indicated to me that we could sell that jingle on the CD or do what we wanted with it without any kind of a contractual commitment from you commitment with you.
Well, no, yes, I did, but I didn't know that you wanted to turn it into a ringtone. That's a different, I think that's a different area.
Okay.
And so if you're going to sell that as a ringtone, then that's money for me that I may be leaving on the table, and I don't want to leave any money on the table. I don't mind you guys using the jingle for the promotion of the restaurant, to promote the segment that I do on your show, but if you use the jingle as a ringtone, now it takes it into an area.
But you did say to me that we could use it as a ringtone.
Yes, I did. I didn't know. I didn't know what a ringtone was, because I'm not that savvy. You know?
All right. So you didn't know that a ringtone was something that people use that comes out of someone's phone?
Yes, Phil, I knew that. Yes, I knew that. What I didn't know was the fact that you guys were going to make that jingle into it. For some reason, it didn't translate into my mind that you could make money selling ringtones for phones. I had no idea.
And well, that's what we were talking about. We were going to take that and we were going to sell it as a ringtone. Yes, you're right. We would, the money would go into, the money would benefit the radio show.
Well, see, I got a problem with that. And
all right, well, then we can, obviously, we're talking about a business deal, with you.
Well, in that case, I'm going to want a pretty sizable share of whatever it is you make. As a matter of fact, I may want almost, all of the money. I may not even want you to use that jingle at all, as a ringtone. You can sell it on your CD, but I want the money from the Ted's of Beverly Hills jingle from the ringtone. I think, the more I think about it, the more I think I'm going to want that money.
Well, it's up to you.
I don't know how we are able to loop into your accounts there, or otherwise you guys have to make an accounting of it.
Why don't you just take it and sell it yourself?
Because I've got it on your website.
So you want me to sell that jingle as a ringtone for you?
Yes.
And I don't get any money for that?
No.
I apologize, folks, that we're talking business here, you know.
Yeah, Mr. Hall's going to call him, man.
Well, I don't want Mr. Hall to call.
No, I would love it if Hall called up, because to be honest with you, I don't think you get what I'm saying.
Well, I don't understand why I am that I'm going to sell your jingle as a ringtone and I don't get any money.
Why would you get money? It's that I gave you permission to sell it on the CD as just a cut, right?
Yes.
All right. But I'm not giving you permission to sell it as a ringtone. That's mine. Okay? That territory, that opportunity belongs to me, all right? Years ago, I remember when I was consulting with Al Davis about the Oakland Raiders, and they had moved back to Oakland, and there was some noise about Seattle moving to L.A., but Al very rightfully said, the L.A. opportunity belongs to us. And he very rightfully did say that. And
how could he say that with the Oakland Raiders back in Oakland?
Because Oakland had staked out that territory. Oakland had said, we've been there, it's ours, we don't want to be there right now, we're moving back to Oakland, and we'll see how the water feels up there. But right now, we've already, if you'll pardon me for saying this, Phil, we've already marked our territory. So if you want to say it this way, and it's probably not a very nice way of saying it, Al Davis came to L.A., urinated to mark his territory, and, you know...
Well, a lot of people think that's exactly what he did, so...
No, let's not be hateful, Phil, all right?
And well, Al Davis came down here and sprayed.
Yeah, like an alley cat. That's what you do. And then he said, okay, you smell that? That's me. But I'm taking my team back to Oakland. But if you go to L.A. and you're an NFL owner and you smell something pungent, that's Al Davis.
You know what? I don't think your examples are too far off the mark for a lot of NFL owners. I think that anywhere they went and they smelled something pungent, they probably thought it was Al Davis.
I just think that's very disrespectful, Phil. You know what?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not saying. I'm just, you know, the relationship he had.
No, I understand that, but I don't think you need to bring it up. All I'm telling you is this: I want you to sell the Teds of Beverly Hills jingle as a ringtone on your website. I get 100% of the profits. And the reason why I get 100% of the profits is I'm letting you use the jingle on your Best of Ted Bell download. What do you think? Look, there's nothing to think about, Phil.
All right, so there's no negotiation here.
No, there's no negotiation. I had no idea that this ringtone thing was something you could sell.
Otherwise, you never would have given me the ringtone. You wouldn't have greenlit it in the first place.
Exactly. There's no way. But when Hall gets on the line here, and you know I respect his opinion, and you know that I respect your opinion, but I also I respect my opinion. Yeah, let me tell you the opinions that I respect.
You're right, too.
Okay, let me get David up here. So, David, you've been hearing this?
Yeah, you know, I've been listening. Ted, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Listen, you're saying that you want us to sell the ringtone and we don't get any profit at all.
None.
And what wiggle room have we got?
Yeah, you don't have any wiggle room.
So we're not negotiating?
No.
All right, that sounds fair. Thanks a lot, Phil. And, you know, one of the things I'm going to want to do is...
What'd you do?
I hung up on him because that's the goofiest thing I've ever heard in my life. Boy, talk about driving a hard bargain. Thanks a lot, David.
Well, don't get angry at him, Phil. I mean, you're the guy that said, hey, can I sell a ringtone?
And you're the guy that said, yeah, and go ahead and keep the money. And then you found out how valuable it was, and now you want to keep 100%. That's what I call that's a marvelous negotiation. It's kind of the long way around, but...
Well, you know what? You live and learn, man. You live and learn.
All right, we're going to be right back here in the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We got a lot to talk with Ted about here in our regular Ted Bell segment here. This portion brought to you by Ted's of Beverly Hills. Don't forget, we have the Best of Ted Bell on our website, the Best of Ted Bell downloads as chosen by our Backstage Pass members. So these are all cuts that were chosen by our subscribers. PhilHenryShow.com. Go to the shop and get the Best of Ted Bell download. We'll be right back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. PhilHendryShow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com. By the way, with a backstage pass, you also get live streaming video of our show each and every night, and that's where we are right now, here from the El Pacifico. We got Ted Bell, who's going to join us back here again in just a moment. But I did want to mention just one tiny little detail about this next quarter hour. We're going to talk about Andy Griffith because he did pass on today. The news that we got about the death of Andy Griffith was around 7 a.m. this morning, and it spread pretty quickly. He was obviously an accomplished television performer. He was a monologist. He was on stage as well as in movies. I think he started his career as sort of a comic monologist. He did a monologue about football that was quite funny. And so that is going to be the focus here of what Ted wants to talk about here in the next quarter hour. And for those of you who are not aware of the passing of Andy Griffith, there's a number of stories in here. There's a great story here from Ron Howard, who co-starred with him all those years on that Andy Griffith show. Ted, were you a fan?
Well, yeah, I would say I was a fan of Andy Griffith. I don't think how you could not be a fan of what that band was able to achieve. To me, it was remarkable. And I don't think that anybody in the history of entertainment being born with a lot of the disadvantages that Andy Griffith was born with or that he developed over time, has achieved anywhere near as much as Andy Griffith. And that's the source of my admiration for him. Did I think he was the funniest guy in the world? Not really, but I think he surrounded himself with some very funny people.
Oh, my God. I mean, Don Knotts, I guess you could say that Andy Griffith discovered him.
Well, yeah, I think he certainly popularized him. Don Knotts was one of the greatest character actors I think American television has ever discovered. Ron Howard went on to become a director. So I think in that sense, Andy Griffith was all that and more. I'm trying to think of the name that he used on the TV show. It wasn't Andy Griffith. It was Andy Smith or something like that.
You know, that's a very interesting question. It's a good question. I don't know the name, the character that he played on the Andy Griffith Show or Mayberry RFD, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it was called Mayberry RFD, I think, after it was the Andy Griffith Show, right?
No, I think it was the other way around. I think it was Mayberry RFD, and then it was the Andy Griffith Show.
Why would they do that?
I guess because after he became popular, it became more. It made more sense to call it the Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, okay. All right, I understand that. But what was the name he used on the show? Andy Brown? I want to say it was Brown.
No, it was... why is it important?
Because it was confusing. I think that people knew this fine actor, but they didn't know what his name was. And then they called it the Andy Griffith Show, but was that the name of the character, or was that the real actor? See?
No, I don't know the name he used on the show. I can't remember. I could look it up, but it was Andy something.
Ron Howard wasn't Ron, it was Opie, and I know Don Knotts was Barney Fife. So Andy Griffith, why was he Andy? It's beyond me. And these are some of the things, the advantages, I guess, they gave to an Andy Griffith, given what he was contending with. And
what when you say contending with, what was he contending with? I know that he was born, maybe he wasn't born wealthy, was he?
I don't know, but I know it's obvious what he was contending with. I mean, when you look at him and you look at what he was able to achieve, you've got nothing but admiration in your heart.
And but what do you mean specifically?
Well, I think how do you become successful? How do you become as popular as Andy Griffith became having that kind of a mental makeup, I guess.
What are you saying? Are you saying that he was slow or?
Well, I think it became obvious to all of us when you saw the success of this band from this No Time for Sergeants, A Face in the Crowd. This was a guy that was not the sharpest. What's the word they use? They always talk about the sharpest tool in the shed. And yet, there he was.
Let's keep in mind something. This man passed on today, okay?
I understand that.
So what are you trying to say?
Phil, you keep asking me what am I trying to say. I'm telling you, Andy Griffith was a terrific performer and actor. And he did unbelievable things, given that he was not the sharpest bulb not the sharpest bulb on the tree, but how do they say it? Yeah, Johnny,
the sharpest tool in the shed?
Yeah, but what's the one with the bulb? The sharpest, the brightest bulb on the tree? Is that what they say? But in any event, Johnny, what is it? Brightest bulb. Brightest bulb on the tree and the sharpest what? Sharpest card in the deck? Sharpest card in the deck?
No, not the sharpest card in the deck. I don't know why we're wasting time with this.
Well, what would you call it?
The sharpest tool in the shed in the 52-card deck.
Sharpest tool in the shed with a 52-card deck. And
are you? What are you doing, man? Are you asking me about what you want to say about Andy Griffith? First of all,
I'm just trying to use the right phrase.
Never mind the phrase. First of all, you're saying that somehow Andy Griffith, the character that he played on television, was the way he was in real life.
Well, of course it was. The guy came from North Carolina.
No, I'm not talking about whether he was from the South. He had an accent. And frankly, the guy that he played on TV was a pretty sharp guy.
Well, how are you figuring that?
How am I figuring that? That sheriff that he played, that Andy character that he played, was a guy that was a father. He was the sheriff of the town. He was the go-to guy. People came to him to settle disputes. People came to him to enforce the law. He never wore a gun. He was a very unique character and a very admirable character.
Now, you got to draw the line. Admirable. I don't know what you mean by that. What I'm trying to say is this. He wasn't. Are you telling me the guy on TV is the same guy that he is not the same guy that he was?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. But although I'm telling you that the guy on TV wasn't that slow, you're trying to give me some idea that the Andy Griffith character on television was some kind of a slow, maybe even a dimwit.
That was my understanding, okay?
Hold on, because Margaret Gray, you know, she does a lot of interviews and has interviewed Andy Griffith. She's on
line three.
Margaret Gray is on line three.
Wait, can I get through one interview without her? I mean, I hate to be rude.
You know, that is uncalled for. That really is. I mean, I'm calling up.
Well, I hate to be rude, but every time I'm on the program, you know, I got you there.
I am calling up to give you some information, all right, Ted? And the information I have, because I did interview Andy Griffith, he was an incredibly intelligent man. He was a very, very insightful man. He had very good instincts. As Phil said, he started on the stage. Ilya Kazan, do you know who that is?
No, I don't know who it is. Is he the, well, I better not say.
What?
What?
Well, I was going to say, is that the Jew?
Boy, you, what?
How dare you?
What do you mean, how dare I? I'm asking you.
And what is it that, what does it mean? Is that the Jew?
Well, the guy that did the un-American activities.
You know something, Ted? I really...
Oh, don't give me a speech, okay?
I'm going to give you a speech. I don't know how you keep the business that you keep in the Hollywood community with an attitude like yours.
What does that mean, is that the Jew?
I was just talking about the fact that he'd spilled his guts to the American activity.
Well, even if he, quote, spilled his guts, as you say that, what has that got to do with his faith or his ethnicity?
Let me tell you what. I mean, there's a lot of people that I know in this business who are related to people that got stepped on by that House American activity, however they say it, and, you know...
So that gives you the right to refer to him in that derisive and derogatory way.
I don't think it's...
You know, Phil, every time I'm on the air with you, Ted, it is a shock, okay?
Well, you know what? Consider this. I just made you look better than you deserve to look.
You know, just for that, no, I'm staying on the air with you.
This is my segment.
I don't care. I'm staying on the air.
Hold on. I got to take a break. 877-876-7445. As we talk with Ted Bell and Margaret Gray about Andy Griffith, and now it's all of a sudden started. Now it's going down some weird road about Elia Kazan. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445 and PhilHenryShow.com. Yeah.
I need to open the guts on this woman.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Do you mind?
Steakhouse.
What?
Do you mind? Yeah, come down to Ted's of Beverly Hills.
That's what I was saying.
Do you mind? I'm doing a commercial. Come down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. We are... I'd like to speak to Phil Hendry.
Okay. Hold on. I don't want... Let's not start the segment.
I want to speak to you. This is my segment.
Ted, you were on here talking in a very anti-Semitic way.
I did not talk in an anti-Semitic way until you called up. Let the record show.
Oh, so I'm the one that inspired that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, you did. And I will say this to Mr. Henry, and I say this to the audience. You inspired a decidedly negative mindset in what was, I think, a very fun and freewheeling conversation I was having with Phil.
I heard you nickel and diming Phil to death on that asinine ringtone topic.
Wait. Who are you to make that decision? I'm talking to Phil about business. All right?
Let me jump in because that's what I'm going to do. I'm the host of the show.
Fine.
Margaret, lay off. All right? You're on here. You want to talk about Andy Griffith. That's what we're going to talk about. Ted, I don't know what your problem is with is he the Jew?
I said it because that's the guy that ratted all these people out. God!
Excuse me, but I know a great many of these people. I'm very wired into the Hollywood scene.
Yeah, I forgot.
How do you like that, Frank?
Hey, look, Ted. Ted's Frank.
Yeah, Frank.
Don't talk to him that way. He's my wife.
Yeah, okay. What did you say, Brains?
What did you call my husband?
You know what I called him.
All right, let's just move on, okay?
I'm saying that it was a derogatory reference given the fact that Elia Kazan had ratted a lot of people out to the House American Activity Uncommittee. I don't know.
You don't even know the name of it. I'm going to use a word. You use the word Jew. Listen to what I'm about to say. You sound like a retard.
All right, so in other words, why don't you just sink to his level?
No, but what does he mean, the House American Activity? What does that mean, Ted?
You know the committee I'm talking about, the House... He ratted people out to the Un-American House Activities, you know, the American Activities Committee.
No, it was the House on Un-American, the House Committee on Un-American Activities.
Oh, nice going. You butchered it up, too.
Phil, it's called the House, what did you call it?
It's the House Committee, the House of Representatives, their committee on Un-American Activities. It was impaneled in the late 1940s because there was a concern about...
Well, I know the history of the communism, right?
Yeah, there was a concern about communist infiltration in Hollywood. I don't know if it was if that particular committee...
Well, why didn't they call it then the House Committee on Hollywood?
Yeah, the House Committee on Un-American and Hollywood. You know, the Hollywood Un-Americanism.
I don't know, Ted, but you guys, just back up. Just back up and be quiet. It was called the House Committee on Un-American Activities, and yes, it was a lot of Hollywood people. And your point is what, Margaret?
Well, you're singling me out.
No, Ted was out of line using that Jew comment. That was out of line, Ted.
Hey, let me tell you something. Every night of the week, I'm in this restaurant talking to some of the finest Jewish citizens of Beverly Hills, California. So don't tell me I'm anti-Semitic, all right?
I don't care what you're doing. On my radio show, I won't hear that, all right?
What does that mean, you won't hear it?
Are you putting your hands over your ears? Or?
No, I'm...
Phil, I don't know what you mean.
All right, I'm saying I don't want to hear it, and I will not hear it. Is that fair enough?
All right, it's fair. You know, it's your show. But I will tell you that this guy, Kazan, and what I don't know what kind of a name that is, Kazan.
Kazan.
What is that?
It's Kazam. I thought it was Kazam.
No, it's Ilya Kazan, K-A-Z-A-N.
All right.
And you know what? I think something speaks very clearly about Ilya Kazan. Robert De Niro.
Oh, here you go. You're going to pull that card, huh?
Yeah, I am going to pull it. Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese both escorted him onto the stage there at the Academy Awards that year for that Lifetime Achievement Award. And those are two guys that are very big, big figures in Hollywood. And they had no problem being seen on the same stage with Ilya Kazan, all right?
And both of those men, of course, were influenced heavily by Ilya Kazan.
And yes, they were influenced heavily. So what does that mean? It means that they have, if there was anything to forgive?
Well, I think there is. He ratted out people. You know,
Ted, this is no sweat off of you. What do you care?
Because some of these people are my friends. And when a guy stands there before the American Committee on whatever the hell you want to call it and says, oh, he's a commie, he's a commie, he's a commie, and he's a commie, you know, people have a right, a constitutional right in this country to be a commie. And you had Ilya Kazan or Kazan talking about these people like they were the scum of the earth just because they went to a commie meeting. Or maybe they joined the commie party and they wanted to, whatever, blow up the Statue of Liberty. I mean, it's bad.
Well, you know, regardless of who he was ratting out, as you call it, he was asked the question, and he answered the question. And you know what, man? Unless you put yourself in his shoes, you don't know what you're going
to
do.
What's that supposed to mean?
In other words, unless you know for a fact, you're sitting there, and a guy is threatening your career. You're never going to work again. You're never going to work again unless you answer these questions. What are you
going to
do?
I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to deny.
That is such a load of horse dung.
I am going to go to jail.
You're not going to go to jail, man. They're not going to put you in jail. They simply put you on a blackball list.
What's that mean, blackball?
You don't know what blackball means. It means that you are on a list
of blackballs?
Blackball means that you don't work. They won't let you work. And those people got blackballed. So you're going to sit there in front of the House, as you call it, the House Committee on American Activities, or whatever the hell.
No, that's what you called it.
No, I know what I called it. Are you going to sit there and say, yeah, I'm not going to answer your questions because I'm going to protect my friends, and who cares if I never work again?
Yes.
See, Phil, I'm glad you're holding his feet to the fire. Anybody that knows you, Ted, knows that that is the most fragrant load of something that dropped...
Hey, Ted, Frank Gray.
Yeah.
Ted, I love you, but that is, Margaret said it, and I think he said it very well. That just fell, what you just said, fell out of the back end of a mule.
So in other words, it's horse dung.
No, he's the Frank said mule.
Who cares, man? What you're basically saying is it's...
Boy, are you ready? You're saying that what I said is what I said.
Yes, it's mule dung.
It's far worse than horse dung or even bull do, you know.
Give me the phone, Frank. God almighty, he is bad tonight.
Okay, so where are we going here now? I don't even know what the hell it is we're talking about anymore. We were talking about Andy Griffith.
That's right. I'm sorry, Phil.
Yeah, we're talking about Andy Griffith. And the reason why we brought up Ilya Kazan is because Ilya Kazan hired Andy Griffith. Now, this is a guy that worked with Marlon Brando.
Hold on for a minute. Are you going to give a speech here?
Yes, I am. Ilya Kazan worked with Marlon Brando. He worked with Carl Malden. He worked with George C. Scott. He worked with the greatest actors in the American theater. And Ilya Kazan read Andy Griffith for this role and hired him. Now that, I say, is some pretty, pretty good company. And for you to sit there and say, boy, look at all that Andy Griffith achieved, given the fact that he was born slow.
Yeah, he wasn't born slow. He was born in the South. And while it is an absolutely understandable mistake...
That's what I'm saying. You know, you can't fault me. The guy walked around. Do you know that for the longest time I thought that the gentleman, Jim Nabors, had a very serious stroke? And
what do you mean?
Because every time you saw Jim Nabors, the face was... And he would sing. I got to get Bill Dunphy over here. Billy, come here for a minute. Bill Dunphy. Here's a guy that beats me at every. Billy, how you doing? Great. Bill, sing. Do your Jim Nabors impression.
Hold on for a minute.
No, wait. Do your Jim Nabors. Well, I don't know how to do it. Sing. I tell you, sing. Old Kentucky Home.
Well, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home.
Now, you ought to see his face when he does that. It looks like he's had a full stroke that has cut all the nerve endings to the left side. And
you're talking about the drool. What you're calling? You're talking about drool mouth.
Yeah, the drool mouth. And you know, drool. You can, and this is Frank Gray, Phil. Drool mouth is Jim Nabors had the market cornered on it, but it doesn't.
What do you mean drool mouth?
You never saw Jim Nabors' mouth.
I saw Gomer Pyle.
Well, same difference. Go ahead, do it again, Bill.
Oh, the sun shines bright.
Yeah, you ought to see his face. You're doing it. Look at that. There's even some spit coming out.
Well, it's hard.
Yeah, I know. Bill just told me it's hard to do. So,
all right. So now we have what? Now we're talking about Jim Nabors, who looked like he had a stroke. The fact is.
Well, no, but I'm saying all of those actors, George Lindsay. I swear to God, I saw George Lindsay blowing a snot rocket. I mean, that's a guy that you could see. George Lindsay looked like the kind of guy that would walk down the street and just go ahead and pinch off one nostril, and I mean fire one, you know, tube one, bang. And
okay, that's great. And so we've got one guy with drool mouth, another guy firing.
Well, you have really just, everyone is a big fat cliche to you, aren't they?
Am I right or am I wrong? Let me ask Dickman.
Yes, sir.
Am I right or wrong about all those people?
I don't know who they are, but...
Well, you know, look up a picture of them.
Okay, so what you've done is you've come on the show here, and you've drawn, you know, a bunch of stereotypes.
That's the word exactly, Phil. All stereotypes.
They're not stereotypes. If what I'm saying is wrong...
What the George Lindsay with a snot rocket and Jim Nabors with the drool mouth, or he looks like he had a stroke... You know, I mean, all of these things, in your mind, mean one thing. Andy Griffith was somehow slow.
No, he was Southern. That's all I'm trying to say. And I would think that you'd give me at least a little bit of the kind of thing... What is that? Is that the...
That's a commercial that you got to do.
What do you mean I got to do a commercial here?
Yes.
God. Hey, come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills tomorrow. We're doing an Andy Mayberry RFD Griffith. I forget the name of the show, but we're going to do a full... what do you call it? A marathon.
Really? What channel is that on?
Well, if I tell you what channel it's on, they're not going to come. What an idiot.
No, he's not going to tell you the channel, Phil.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, Phil. It's on channel this and that, and that way you don't have to come to my bar.
All right, we'll be back here. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. I'm sorry, but you're the guy with the snot rockets and...
I don't hate that me. It's George Lindsay.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me, Ted Bell, Margaret Gray, as we talk about Andy Griffith.
Well, and we haven't said a whole lot about Andy Griffith.
No, I think we have.
No, Margaret's right. We haven't said a whole lot about Andy Griffith, and we've said a lot of stupid stuff here. Let me get a couple of phone calls in here. I want to talk to Ian on the Phil Hendry Show. Ian, go ahead.
Well, is a question for Margaret Gray. Is she still there?
Yes, I'm right here, Ian.
Mostly, I have very sort of a sickly childhood. You know, I watch a lot of television, and I was raised in Great Britain.
No kidding.
Right. Yeah, I guess my accent is.
Yeah, we get your accent.
My accent's noticeable, but. I was a big Andy Griffith fan. I like Mayberry RFD and a lot of shows like that. And Danny Thomas, they had a lot of it in rerun.
Yeah, well, Danny Thomas is where Andy Griffith...
Well, hold on. I was going to say that. You know, I know all that. There's not a whole lot you could tell me about Andy Griffith that I don't know. And I was going to say,
well, he started with Danny Thomas.
Now, I know that. I know he started with Danny Thomas. As I say, I know a lot about Andy Griffith.
You're a big fan of his?
Yes, sir. I was a very, very big fan of Andy Griffith. A very, very big fan of Don Knotts.
What about Ron Howard?
I don't like Ron Howard. I don't. It's not I don't like Ron Howard. I thought Opie, he's a little kid, you know. He's not anybody on that show that I say, well, you know, I think he's funny or I think he's this or that. I never liked Opie. And
well, I mean, now that he's a director?
Well, I like him even less, you know. He's all I think Ron Howard is rubbish myself, but that's...
You think Ron Howard's what?
I think Ron Howard is rubbish.
You think he's rubbish?
Oh. Right. I do. I think he's rubbish. There's nothing he does that I've at least been interested in. And I just called up. I want to talk about Andy Griffith.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough. Ron Howard is not the topic.
Right. Ron Howard's not the topic.
What did you think about the... Can I
finish what I'm saying? Because I was listening to you, both of you talking, and there's information you're not getting out. Like, for instance, the show was on the air for 9 years, and they had Don Knotts and Ron Howard and that Francis Aunt B, who I thought was very underrated and not appreciated at all.
And that was Aunt B. Yeah, she was wonderful.
No, she wasn't that great, but for what she did, you know, for what she did. She was like the mother in that family, you know? And I always, she used to remind me of my own, my grandmother, not my own mother. And I thought she sort of anchored the home life, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Andy had a girlfriend, that one lady was his girlfriend.
Yes.
And then Don Knotts, he had a girlfriend, Thelma Lou, who was like, pretty probably very good looking for a chap like that, don't you think?
The Thelma Lou character?
Yeah, I thought she was far better looking than he probably in real life what he'd be able to get.
But in real life, the Barney Fife character?
That's right.
I don't know. I mean, Thelma Lou is pretty, but let's face it, every time they cast a female opposite a strong male character, she's going to be attractive.
Well, but no, but Andy Griffith's female had buck teeth.
Well, I don't remember that.
You don't remember it?
What do you mean, buck teeth?
Andy Griffith's girlfriend. And
oh, her name was Helen.
Right, Helen. She had buck teeth. And
she had buck teeth. She...
Yeah, she had buck teeth. And she was not as good looking as Thelma Lou, who I thought was much more attractive. And yet Barney Fife was not like as strong and masculine macho as Andy Griffith, see?
Well, so what does that mean to you? And why, you know...
It seems to me that it was very creative casting, that's all. And I thought that was a very strong part of the show.
I'm interested to know, Ian, you come from the UK. Was it on in reruns over there?
I guess so. If I watch it, God.
Well, I don't know. You're very rude.
Well, I'm sitting here listening to you. Blah, 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 blah. You're not saying anything. You're not talking about nothing. It's all a bunch of rubbish. It's all a bunch of crap, isn't it?
And what do you mean a bunch of crap? I've been here. I mentioned a lot of...
You're talking about Snot Rocket.
What?
You talking about a Snot Rocket?
Snot Rocket?
Snot Rockets. And he's right.
You talking about Snot Rockets. You talking about a man had a stroke.
I'm telling you that Jim Neighbors looked like he had a stroke. They had to strap a bucket for drool on that guy's face.
I think it's... So disrespectful of Jim Neighbors to say something like that. That was a great show.
Well, I agree with you.
Why didn't you speak up when this retard...
Who's the retard?
You. And by the way, you sound like you got buck teeth, too.
I do not have... I have an overbite. Who is this guy anyway, Henry?
Listen, Ian, thank you very much.
Well, I thought I'd come on and try to straighten some people out, because he's on here talking about George Lindsay with a snot rocket, talking about Helen... Talking about Thelma Louise, or Thelma Lou, or whatever, Don Knotts, and it's all rubbish, and they're not making the show sound good at all.
Well, I really am sorry, Ian, if I gave you that impression.
But it's just you're not correcting this retard. You know.
All right, watch it with the retard. Thank you very much, Ian.
Right.
Did you hang up on him?
Yes, I... Well, I'm going on to another call. Is that okay? David Hall is checking back in with us here. David is out this evening having dinner in Pasadena. David, how are you doing?
I'm listening to the conversation. This started out in the early part of the hour when I had to talk to you guys about the downloads, and now I hear people talking about Andy Griffith passed on. He's a very respected and very loved character in American theater, in American television, in American cinema. So I don't want to hear anything disrespectful. Do you understand?
Well, that's what I've been trying to do, David. I've been trying to tell Ted to keep his comments as uplifting as possible.
And I have been trying to keep them uplifting. I've tried very desperately to keep them uplifting. I haven't said anything about Andy Griffith other than that he was a fantastic performer.
Yeah, but all of that snot rocket stuff and,
Well, you know, that limey... No, all right, I shouldn't have...
There he goes, still with limey and Jew.
All right, you know, we're gonna move into the news break. Thank you very much, all of you guys, for contributing tonight on the passing of the great Andy Griffith. For my money... I think he was almost a genius at his ability to produce, at his ability to direct, at his ability to teach other actors. And Ron Howard mentioned that as well. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Teach other actors.
Why don't you get lost?
God.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. And this hour, we're going to talk with Dr. Ron Tarner a little bit about a kind of a nerdy story, but we also just wanted to say hello to him because he was married this past weekend. His wife, Julie, and he... vacationing here in California, I think, and then they're heading on back to Colorado where their home is in Denver. But we are going to talk mostly to him about married life. He and his son have primarily, you know, it's just been the two of them, and he shares custody with Brandon's mom, but this is a big step for Ron, so we want to give him our very best wishes. There has been science in the news, and generally that's when we bring Dr. Tarner on. But I we'll talk a little bit about this thing called a God particle, but it's pretty, it's I don't get it, and it may be stuff that's a little bit beyond the average person, but we will talk with them about it. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhenryshow.com. That's where we have live streaming video of our show every night. During our live broadcast, we also do a video cast that's in high definition. It's an HD picture, so you can enjoy our video cast here from the El Pacifico as well as listen to the show. And the next day, we have a podcast as well as a video archive of the show. We have thousands of hours of archived radio shows. We have just put into our shop this evening, just in time for the 4th of July, the best of Ted Bell, who was with us last hour. And we also feature a free track on that particular download, Nachos and Grape Drink. Nacho Cheese and Grape Drink, I think is the name of that track, bud.
Yeah, Nacho Cheese and Grape Drink, another free one on the IOD one, too.
Right. Well, we have a free track on our Best of WIOD from the very early 90s. So it's all over there at philhendryshow.com. Check out our shop. Check out our archives. Get a backstage pass and be a part of it. Which is a really cool lockout for just about any product.
Yeah, be a part of it. Yeah, you could be selling like season tickets or diapers, you know?
Yeah. Diapers, huh? So it depends. Be a part of it.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, on the line with us here from Denver, Colorado, where they are attending Brandon's, your son's school carnival, Ron?
Yes, it is, Phil. This is the 13th annual carnival here at... St. Eglin's, and we're very, very pleased to be part of the Men's Club here. And there's a good crowd, and we've been having a good time too.
All right, and congratulations to you on your marriage.
Thank you very much. And Julie is with us this evening, Phil. We're very happy, and I thank you very much for that.
And it's been a long time since you've been married. I know that you and Brandon have been kind of a team, huh?
We have. We've been the two musketeers, and now with Julie and our family, you know, we feel complete. Brandon gets along with her very well. He loves his mother, of course. Now he has a stepmother.
And do you, if I'm asking any question that I shouldn't ask, let me know.
No, go ahead, Phil.
Do you share custody?
Yes, I do. I share, Brandon's mother and I share custody, and I have it 50% of the time, and she has it the other 50% of the time, you know, when she's able to. Because as I've mentioned to you, and I don't think I'm talking out of school, she has a little bit of a drinking problem.
I don't want to get into anything personal.
No, it's not personal. I mean, when you say 50% custody, I want to be very clear that technically we do share it, but truth be told, I have it more than...
In other words, with you making these comments, you'll be exposed, won't you?
Exposed to what?
To her...
Well, I think, you know, look, I think that Christina, who is Brandon's mother, knows that what I'm saying is true. I don't think that there's any, there's no secret. I mean, she's been close to a bottle for a lot of years. And
okay, I mean, it just sounds kind of negative, and I'd rather not...
Okay, that's fair enough, Phil.
So just suffice it to say they got 50%... custody.
Exactly. And so we, like I say, we are a team.
So you started to allude to having Brandon with a stepmother.
Well, you grew up with stepmothers, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I had a stepmother. I had two, as well as my own mother. It was, I never really saw them as mothers so much as they were just my dad's wife, and, you know, they were nice people.
How many times was your father married?
My dad was married 3 times. Okay.
Oh, all right. Well, I hope, Phil, that this is, the second time's the charm for me, because I don't want to have women, coming in and out of my son's life. He doesn't need that. That's not stable. And certainly I don't need that either. I'm looking for a partner in life, someone that I could share my life with, and I don't want to... I don't want to say anything negative about Brandon's mother. She's a great lady, but I think there's been a parade of men in and out of her life that it's made things difficult for me to explain to my son why his mother needs that many men. You know.
Well, look, I don't even know that you need to explain that, I'm not really comfortable. You know?
Well, I know, Phil, but you were asking me about my son.
No, I know, and he's a great kid, and I've met him, and he's a terrific kid. I'm sure there's got to be a better way of putting that to him.
What is that?
Well, why his mother needs so many men.
Phil, you're absolutely right. I wish there was, but the fact is, it's been a parade of men over there, and
All right, if we could refrain, maybe. I'll tell you why I'm concerned.
Go ahead.
I'm concerned that you expose my radio show and yourself to...
some kind of litigation?
Well, I think that what you're saying could be construed as some people may, she may construe it as libelous.
Phil, listen, I understand, and out of respect to you, I will temper my comments, but believe me when I tell you, just to put your mind at ease... And Mr. Hall or anybody else, what I'm saying, I can assure you, there's no way she could refute it. But I will put your mind at ease. I won't make any reference. I mean, all I said was two things that you can't refute. She drinks to excess, and there's been this unending stampede of, well, I should say stampede.
I heard what you said, and I think saying it once would suffice.
Fair enough, Phil. I appreciate that.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Ron Tarner here. Ron is a good friend of the show. He has contributed on a number of topics, scientific topics. You know, we've talked about a lot of things on the show, Ron, having to do with astronomy, nature. You were our go-to guy when the whole, global warming topic was, if you'll pardon the expression, warming up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now we have a story here that maybe you can sort of boil this down for us. This is the story about the God particle.
Yeah.
And it's called the Higgs boson. The Higgs is who?
Higgs was the name of the scientist who originally, I shouldn't say discovered, because we don't really know whether this boson, as it's called, which is the smallest piece of matter, theoretically the smallest piece of matter known to the human race. Dr. Higgs, or Professor Higgs, I don't know much about him, but he was the one that originally theorized the existence of this boson, which is this small piece of matter.
Now, what is the quality about this piece of matter that I was talking to Neil West, our engineer. He said, well, it is such a small piece of matter that it passes between our reality and perhaps another dimension.
Well, let me ask you a question before I go on.
Sure.
What's this guy?
He's my engineer.
But he's not a scientist.
No, Neil's not a scientist, but he's a self-described geek, as I am.
Okay, well, and I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but that's kind of typical, I think, of a lot of people that, spend time in some of these nerd, and I'm saying this, Phil, with great affection, but you know these nerd rooms, you know, where you go and you find a nerd? You know what I mean?
Nerd rooms.
These guys that are dorks that like science.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's typical of those people. They talk about stuff they don't know anything about.
Well, is he wrong?
No, he's not wrong. He's right, but it's uncomfortable for me as a scientist to have you tell me that some guy that's your engineer is already telling you about how the boson passes between dimensions. It's disturbing.
Well, why is that disturbing? I don't understand. I mean, aren't we trying to educate?
Yes, we are trying to educate, but I'm the doctor, and you're going to your board op. I don't know. It just bothers me.
Okay.
And that pause bothered me, too. I'll tell you why the pause bothered me. I think you're now thinking that there's something wrong with me.
No, I'm not thinking that at all.
But are you thinking that there's something emotionally wrong with me?
I'm thinking that you're a little wound up tonight.
No, not at all. I've like I said, I'm getting married. My son's with me. My fiancé is with me. And we're at the fair. Why do you say that?
Because it just sounded like you were being a little overly critical. I didn't mean anything by that, and Neil didn't. We were talking, as people will talk.
And you guys were just chit-chatting about that.
Yeah, that's all. I had the story, and I said, well, I'm going to talk to Dr. Turner about it. And I said, hey Neil,
well, okay, and you said, hey, Neil, what is that? And you could have, oh, never mind, I don't know.
Pardon me for asking this. Are you all right?
Yes, yeah, I'm okay.
All right, 877-876-7445 is our number here. Dr. Ron Turner talking to us about his life. He's about to get married, talking to us about the Higgs boson. Things that are, you know, fun to talk about for the doctor. The God particle, his son, his fiancée. The fair that they're attending there at his son's school. It's all ahead. We'll continue here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
God.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Here we have Dr. Ron Turner on the line with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. And Dr. Turner joining us, just kind of a night where we're catching up with him. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, Ron. I imagine you have your son Brandon with you. Guys going to see the fireworks, huh?
Oh, yeah. Phil, absolutely. The fireworks that they have here in Denver, there's three or four different places. We go to Red Rock, which is gorgeous, and they have the fireworks out there over the chaparral, over the desert, and the rock formations. So we're going to see that. And as I said, Julie is with us.
Now, what is your fiance's name?
Her name is Julie, and I misspoke. I said it was Linda. It's Julie, and which caused a little bit of a problem. I've got a short-term memory, long-term memory. I've got so many things on my mind these days, Phil. I'm sure you understand. I know that a lot of people knew me, and I was a very heavy user of marijuana at one time, as you know.
And no, I did not know that.
Yes, I was. I was a very heavy user of marijuana, and I had a memory problem, and I stopped, and I suddenly realized what I'd been doing. You know, Letty Bruce tells the story of eating raspberry Jell-O in New York, and eating so much raspberry Jell-O that he became paranoid that everybody noticed that he was eating raspberry Jell-O. Do you recall that?
I think I do remember the bit. Yeah.
And he said he was driven halfway across New York by his paranoia and hunger. Well, I guess that story really doesn't have anything to do with what I'm talking about.
You know, I'll tell you what I think I'm hearing tonight, if you don't mind, Ron.
Yeah, no, please tell me.
I'm hearing nerves.
Yeah, that could be very true.
I'm hearing a case of nerves. I'm hearing you sound like you're nervous. And let me just speculate here. I mean, you're getting married.
Yeah, it's. I'll tell you what. I love her very much.
And when you talk about memory problem, now don't be embarrassed. Are you having a hard time remembering her name?
I am, and I think I'm blocking it.
Is she with you right now?
No, she and Brandon are on the Ferris wheel right now. But I.
What is her name?
Her name is. Well, I want to say it's Julie. I think it's either Julie or Linda. And here's why I'm having a problem remembering. I love her very much, but I'm afraid. And, Phil, you were married, and you know if you pick the wrong woman, it could be a disaster. If you pick the right woman, it could be a wonderful experience, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I think maybe I've picked the wrong one. I don't know, but I'm very nervous, and that's why you heard me getting snippy a moment ago. And that's why I was talking about Chris, Brandon's mother. Everything I'm saying about her is true, that she's a you-know-what breaker, that she drinks, that there's a parade of men going in and out of the place, that she has abused prescription drugs, that she's abused antidepressants, that she drinks.
Okay, so we have all of that stuff out of the way about Brandon's mom, as I told you I'm worried about any libel. So, okay, what you said about her is true, but let's focus in on what your problem is. Your problem is this lady that you're about to marry.
No, I don't have a problem with her. I don't have a problem with her.
Well, you can't remember her name, so you said you have a short...
I'm having a hard time remembering her name, yeah.
What is her name?
Well, I said it was Julie the last time. I think it's Linda. Here's why I'm having a hard time remembering her name. I'm afraid to marry her. And I can tell you this, quite frankly, Phil, because she's on the Ferris wheel right now. And as a matter of fact, hold on a minute. I'm going to talk to Dave Duncan. Can you hold on, Phil?
Go ahead.
Hey, Dave, where is Linda or Julie? The lady that I came with, where is she? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? I asked you where she was. Well, they're going to find her for me, but I want to make sure she doesn't come walking up. Here's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the fact that I'm marrying her because I don't, in my heart of hearts, I don't want to marry her.
Then why are you?
I...
Why are you marrying somebody that... Do you love her?
Yeah, I do love her, yes.
Then what's wrong with marrying her?
Because I love her, but I don't want to share a house with her. I don't want to be under the same roof with her. I want to be able to see her when I want to see her. I don't want to have to get into a bed every night. There she is. You understand what I mean? I don't think I have to explain myself, do I?
Well, you still want to be a bachelor?
Well, yeah, but more to the point, I've got a better reason for this. I'm being forced to marry her because of the fact that she wants me to marry her. She's forced me to marry her.
How could she force you to marry her?
Because she came to me, she came with me to a meeting, to a pre-screening that I went to, that if it got out...
So she's blackmailing you?
She isn't. I'm afraid that she's going to open her mouth and say it, and I won't have control over it.
Then why don't you open your mouth and say it? and you won't have to marry her. What is it? What is it, Ron?
Well, oh, God. Hold on. Here she comes. Hey, honey, how are you?
How are you?
Can I talk to her?
Yeah, I'm on the radio with Phil Henry. Do you want to go out of the air with him?
Yeah.
Hi, Phil. This is, how do you spell your name?
I'll stop it. Right?
How do you spell your name?
K-U-L-I.
Okay, it's Julie.
Hi.
And who is this?
It's Julie Westerbeck, Phil.
Julie, how are you?
I'm wonderful, thank you.
And you're marrying Ron?
Yes, we're going to be married. We're going to be married probably by the end of the summer. It depends on whether or not my mother and father are able to come out for it. We're probably going to be married in Las Vegas.
Okay. And Ron says that he has such a great time with you and that you've been so great with his son.
Oh, we have a wonderful time with Brandon. He's a wonderful boy.
And what do you do?
Right now, I'm between jobs. I was working as a checker at Ralph, and I'm between jobs. I'm looking for another checker job.
Okay. So you're all right.
Which doesn't mean that I can't stay with Ron's a scientist. I know that. And I work as a checker at Ralph's. But it doesn't mean that I don't understand what he says, or the stuff what he says, if he would explain it.
Yeah.
Let me have the phone for a minute. Can I have it?
I'll take the phone out of my hand.
Bill, can I talk to you?
All right, hold on. We got to take a break.
Ron doesn't want to talk to me about science.
I want to address this.
Okay, when we come back, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
What, are you bummed out?
This is weird. It's getting weird.
I told you.
Phil. We'll be right back.
You want to talk now?
Not now, no.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We have, it's kind of a lot of action going on where Dr. Ron Tarner is right now at St. Eglin, where they are attending a festival at his son Brandon's school. And Ron Tarner on the line with us. We were talking with his fiancée, it's Julie, is my understanding, Ron.
Well, I don't remember what she said.
Okay, so is she still there?
Yeah, honey.
Hi, Phil.
Okay, so, Julie, I just wanted to say hello to you and congratulate you on this wedding.
Well, you know, I think Ron thinks that, you know, it's a big secret as to why he's marrying. I know he's marrying me because of the fact that he's afraid I'm going to tell people.
Can I jump in here, please?
Well, Ron,
can I jump in here, please? Because I think it's by right.
All right, but I...
Were you about to tell Mr. Henry?
Oh, well...
Boy, Phil, let me just be very clear with you that I am burying her because there was a period in my life when I was confused. It was 2 years ago when I first met... I'm sorry.
Her name's Julie.
Well, I thought it was Linda. And I know it sounds like a comedy routine I'm doing.
It sounds ridiculous that you can't remember the name of a woman that you're going to marry.
Because of the short-term memory loss that I've had, I'm under a lot of stress.
What's the story with this marriage?
I'm going to tell him, dear. Why don't you and Brandon go on the merry-go-round or something, or go on...
Merry-go-round? You just want to take clothes up?
Go on the hammer. Oh, my God, she's taking him on the hammer. I just said, go on the merry-go-round. She said she can't because she throws up. And I said, well, go on the hammer, and that's where they're going.
She's going to puke her guts up on that.
Right. Exactly.
Woo!
I mean, this is what I'm talking about, you know? I told her that we could be married. There was only one thing that I needed from her, and that was for her not to ask me questions about science or about what I do. And the reason why, Phil, is that she checks groceries at a grocery store.
Well, so why can't the girl learn?
That's fine, and she can learn, but she's a grocery store checker, and that means there's never going to be any real meeting of the minds there.
Why are you marrying her?
This is a big... I'm marrying her because I was confused a few years ago when I first met her. Linda or Julie, I'm sorry.
That there's no excuse for that, by the way, but go ahead.
No excuse for what?
That you can't remember her name.
Phil, you're not my father, all right? So please don't talk to me like that.
That's fine, but I think it's... I'm not talking to you like a father. I'm talking to you like a friend. It's disgusting.
God, what? You are a judgmental ass, and I don't care if I'm on the air or not.
Fine, but I think it's disgusting that you're about to marry a woman and you can't remember her name.
I told you, I've got short-term memory loss.
What about your long-term memory?
And that has been damaged, too, by an enormous amount of marijuana, which is my fault. I understand that. And the stress that I'm under. Now, can I finish what I'm going to tell you?
Go ahead.
All right. I simply wanted to say that I had a fear a few years ago. I thought maybe I was a woman in a man's body, and I needed a sex change, and I went to pre-surgical counseling and screening, and she went with me.
So what, is she blackmailing you?
No, I just know that she knows this, and I know that she wanted to get married, and I went ahead and said yes, for fear that if I didn't, she'd call up a talk show like this one, or do something else to let people know that I'd been in counseling for a sex change.
And you did not have the sex change?
No, I did not.
As a result of the counseling?
I'd like to say it was the result of the counseling. It was the fact that I told you, and I don't want to keep saying it, I was a heavy marijuana user. And
when you stopped using marijuana?
Well, I haven't stopped 100%, but when I stopped using it as heavily as I was using it...
You came to realize that you did not want to be a woman?
I came to realize that I was not a woman. That... You know, I know I can hear in your voice that you want to laugh.
No, I don't. I just want to follow this.
And Phil, please don't stutter around, because it sounds like it's a wink and a nod to the audience, like, what a fruitcake, isn't it?
No, it's not. And I wish you would just pay attention to your own problems and not what you think I'm thinking. I'm saying to you, okay, great, you found out that you're not a woman, that you don't need that surgery.
And I promised to marry her because I was afraid she was going to tell people.
And did she?
Not yet, no.
But you came on my radio show and said so.
What?
You just got on my radio show and told everybody that you went in for pre-surgical counseling to be a woman.
You know, the point that I'm making here is...
You understand it's what you did.
The point that I'm making here is that she'd been with me, and I was afraid.
877-876, Phil. I'll tell you, this has been a very interesting night. Let's go to Eric. Eric, hi, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Tarner.
Hello, Dr. Tarner. How are you? I'm good, Eric. How are you doing? I'm good. And my question is the following question. The Higgs boson is a small particle of matter. And Mr. Hendry referred to it as something that's transdimensional. Yes. Have you verified or have you quantified that in your studies? And have you also been able to, have you read any of the research that was done by Dr. Merrick of Bath University in Britain?
No, sir, I have not read any of his work.
May I recommend it?
Yes, sir.
Because there's a very big a paper that has been circulating over there. I think it was in the Lancet, which is, you know the Lancet?
I'm sorry, sir?
The Lancet. It was a paper that appeared in Lancet.
Great.
The Lancet is the British...
yeah, it's the British medical journal. All right. Okay, but I'm curious if you haven't read the paper.
No, I haven't read the paper, sir. I've got bigger problems right now.
No, I heard that you thought that you were a woman.
Oh, boy.
Well, you came on the radio and said it.
I heard that. I thought I'd call and give you an opportunity to take your mind off of it.
You. Phil, hi, it's Julie. Julie Westerberg?
Yeah, Julie.
He told you that he went into counseling.
Julie, this is a caller. My name is Eric, and I did hear it, and I was embarrassed for him, and I'm going to repeat it to friends of mine, but I still respect him as a doctor.
Well, that's what I told him. I said it's obviously going to be something that people will talk about. The people are still going to think you're a good doctor.
Oh, great. That's great.
He's upset.
Well, I don't think that he... Well, I guess he's got himself to blame.
That's my point. He only has himself to blame because he was the one that came on your program.
Yeah, all right. Well, listen, Eric, thanks for your call.
Uh-huh.
877-876-7445. Let's go over here now to Justin. Justin, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to talk to you, Dr. Toner, if he's there.
You know, Bill, this is Julie Westbrook. Dr. Toner is upset.
Oh, well, I want to let him know that even though he wanted to be a woman, and now he doesn't want to be a woman, I remember one time, and I would never do this again, but I huffed some spot remover.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, like, I was sitting around the next day, and I was still high on it, and I thought, I think I'm a woman. And I called up my psychiatrist that my parents sent me to see because they thought I was bipolar and a bunch of other stuff. And I talked to this psychiatrist, and they said I just had too much time on my hands.
Hey, what did they say?
They said I had too much time on my hands. They said that I was just sitting around because I was doing a lot of, I don't know if I can say it, but I was doing a lot of, you know, self-abuse.
Okay.
And it was pretty, I wasn't doing anything, and I started to make stuff up in my head.
Well, you know, that could be Ron's problem because before he met me, he was either working or watching television, but he wasn't doing anything more than that.
Working or watching television, huh?
Right. So all he had was his work and television. And so he'd sit around doing nothing. When I met him, I said, well, what do you do all day? He said he watches TV, and then he goes to sleep, and he said he masturbates and frequently. And then,
all right, I don't need that detail.
You see what I'm saying? And finally, he said, oh, I think I'm a woman. So I said, well, let's go and get some counseling. The doctor threw him out. He said, you're not a woman. You got too much time on your hands.
Well, that's what the psychiatrist told me.
All right, well, that's a very good... is Ron there?
All right, come on, honey.
I'm not going to go over there. People laugh at me.
Come on, honey.
Yes.
Ron, Justin's your name, right?
Yeah.
Listen to this young man. Because I think there's some truth in what he has to say.
All right, I'm listening. Yes, sir. I was listening to you. My name's Justin McElroy, by the way. I go to...
How old are you?
I'm 17.
Okay.
And anyway, I was sitting around... Well, I was using a lot of marijuana myself at one time. And anyway, I also huffed some energy and spot remover.
Yeah.
And I thought that I was a woman, and I wanted to go and get a sex change. And the doctor told me that I was just laying around, you know, masturbating and reading comic books, and I needed to get a life.
All right, so what has this got to do with me?
Well, that's what he thinks your problem is.
You think that my problem was or is?
Well, it was.
That I was laying around masturbating and reading comic books.
Yes, sir, I do.
And why do you think that?
Well, because you talk a lot about science, but... You sort of sound like your head's in your butt. And I think you just sort of, you know, talk scientific stuff like it sounds good, but you're just laying around reading Spider-Man and everything.
Is that right? You know what? I'm done.
You dropped the phone, bud.
I don't give a damn.
He's walking away, so.
All right. I mean, what a chut. Listen, Justin, very good analysis. And,
Well, I don't know if it's a good analysis. I just, you know, I kind of shared more about myself than I wanted to.
Well, I understand that.
Let me give you the phone. What's your name again, son? My name's Justin McElroy. So I'm laying around and I'm reading Spider-Man and I'm masturbating, and that's why I imagine that I'm a woman.
Yeah, because you got too much time on your hands and you need to...
And I need to what?
The young man's saying you need a life.
Young man, do you hear the lady that I'm with?
Yes, sir.
All right. Does she sound like a man?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
She's not. She's a woman. And yet that's the number of cigarettes that she smokes. And her teeth are about that color, too. And yet I got to marry her. You know why? Because I went to counseling to see what it would take to become a woman, and now everyone knows it.
Everyone knows it, so you don't have to marry her.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking.
What?
What, are you that stupid, man? I mean, I'm telling you, for a scientist...
What am I missing?
What you're missing is you didn't want anybody to know it. You've been on my show for the last 15 minutes telling everybody that you went to counseling to get a sex change operation. So what are you hiding?
I told you.
I guess I'm not hiding...
Yeah, you're not hiding anything. Every time I confront you with that very simple fact, you're all like, whoa, whoa. I mean, dude, you know, it doesn't matter whether you went and had the pre-counseling for whatever the hell it's called.
It was called pre-surgical counseling.
Okay. And you found out that, no, you're not a woman, that you're just sitting around smoking too much dope and reading comic books.
Oh, boy. Good night.
All right, so that's, you know, that's, there you go. He hung up. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
I didn't hang up. I dropped the phone.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Dr. Ron Tarner is with us, his fiancée Julie, and son Brandon. Where's Brandon?
We got Brandon over on the... he's over on the... I guess it's the whip, is it?
Yeah, it's the whip.
Because I don't know.
Well, we're dealing with some pretty personal issues here. You're going to get married, but you told me you were going to get married because Julie was the only one that knew that you'd been through this pre-surgical sex... change counseling. Then you told me on the air. I don't know what you're hiding.
I'm not hiding anything. I'm telling you, I was just under a lot of pressure, and it's post-traumatic stress. I don't know what it is. I can't remember her name. You just said her name.
Julie.
Yeah, I can't remember that. Now, I am a heavy marijuana user, and Julie was right. The doctor had said that I had spent an awful lot of time by myself doing ridiculous things, reading the comic.
Phil, the comic books that he was reading were Archie, and the doctor said he had masturbated to...
Yes.
To an Archie comic.
No, not to that, to Veronica, one of the characters. And so this became my world.
What about you? All right, hold on for a minute. I'll take a phone call. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Dan. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Tarner.
Yeah, Phil. How's it going?
Good, good.
Yeah, I just want to make a general comment. The guy that's got on the show right now, I mean, he's been on there about 20 minutes now, and he hasn't missed your name one time. He's got his fiancée standing right next to him. He can't remember her name, and you've said it like 15 times in the last
right.
15 minutes. I think the guy's just an idiot. I mean, yeah, I know. I'm
sure
that. Marijuana.
Yeah, marijuana does kill brain cells that govern long and short-term memory.
Exactly, but you haven't missed Phil's name one time the whole time you've been on the show. But you can't remember Julie, and she's standing right beside you.
I think that's an indication of the kind of brain damage.
And, well, are you up brain? Are you using brain damage as an excuse?
As an excuse for what?
As an excuse for just being sort of stupid, like this man was saying, because...
No, I'm an astronomer. Excuse me, I've got a degree in astronomy from MIT.
That may be, but you're smoking a lot of weed, you were reading a lot of comic books, just as you were saying. You had to go into the sex change counseling that the doctor said you didn't need. He said you just had too much time on your hands.
First of all, I didn't want to mention any of this on the air, so I've been made to talk about this.
No, you haven't. You volunteered the information.
Phil, he went for the sex change.
Would you shut up?
Don't tell her to shut up.
Well, I'm telling her to shut up.
What's her name? Who are you talking to?
Who are you?
This is my caller. This is Dan.
What do you want?
Yeah, who are you talking to?
I'm talking to my fiance, and I told her to shut up.
What was her name again?
Her name is Linda.
No, it's Julie.
No, it's not. It's Linda.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, all right. If you know anything about short-term memory damage done by cannabis and THC, then you know that that's what's happened to me. And
no, I don't think there's anything more seriously wrong with you than what the doctor said. You got way too much time on your hands, and you're sitting around, and thank you very much, Dan, for your call, and you're sitting around talking about reading Archie comics, masturbating to Veronica, and...
I didn't say that. She did.
That's what the doctor said you said.
All right, I told the doctor that. That was between me and the doctor.
877-876-PHIL. Here is Bobby. Go ahead, Bobby.
Hi, Phil. I wanted to ask Dr. Turner if you were using heavy amounts of marijuana. Have you stopped?
No, I have not.
Why not?
Why not?
Because it relaxes me, because I have a wedding coming up that I'm going to need to smoke even more to get through it.
That doesn't make any sense.
You know, it doesn't make sense. You're talking, the woman is right there that you're going to marry.
It's nothing personal.
You just need to smoke a lot of dope to get through the marriage that you're about to have with this woman who you wouldn't marry if she didn't know the secret of you going to counseling.
You know, Phil, this is something you do all the time. I've listened to your program. You do the laundry list of how jacked up your guest is, and 90% of it's wrong. You're doing it right now to me. You're leaving the impression to your audience that I am a step above a mumbling, drooling, a wastrel sitting in the street. And
no, I'm telling everybody what you told me, which is this. You don't want to marry her, but you're going to marry her because she knows about the counseling you went through to have your sex changed. Meanwhile, you're smoking dope and you're masturbating to Spider-Man and Veronica.
No, that's a dirty, filthy lie. I never said Spider-Man.
Okay, whatever. Thanks very much, Ron. What a wasted...
Bobby, get him back on for next week?
No, I don't want him back on for next week. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. It's our News and Information Hour next.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. We got Truth Being Our Bitch here and other talk shows wishing they could go the places we go to. We just have to lead the way. Now, we have our brand-new Best of Ted Bell download on our website in the shop for this 4th of July, so go check it out and download it, man. It is the Best of Ted Bell. It's the very first best of a character that we've ever done in the history of our show. We have Best of CDs that we've done, and those legacy CDs cover a variety of different characters that we've done, but this is the first devoted entirely to one. And it's Ted Bell. So check that out. It's in the shop. And we've got 12, I think, tracks. One is a free track, but they're the best and craziest things that Ted has ever gotten himself involved in. I'll give an example. As we go through the hour, maybe you'll do that.
Yeah, not right now, but you can do it later.
Okay. And what else? Oh, yeah, the episode number 13 of the Free Phil Hendry podcast is also available. So by all means, download the living hell out of that. And you can access our podcast by way of the banner on our homepage at philhendryshow.com. And you can also get our podcast a variety of different places. Stitcher, iTunes, podcast directory. It's all there, and it's all good. So, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with us here. That's just about the strangest night that...
Yeah, man, I don't even know what that guy Ron Tonner talking about.
Well, that's what I get for having somebody on the show and not really knowing why I've got him on the show. I've just, you know, I knew he was going to get married, and I wanted to congratulate him, but the world that he opened us up to was bizarre, man. I mean, that guy's talking about a woman that he doesn't want to marry, but she knows the secret of his sex change, you know, planned sex change operation. So that's the last time we have Ron on the show from a carnival with his fiancée and his son.
All that pressure probably added to it.
I think so. Here's the thing that I was trying to talk to him about, and I don't know how... This is kind of dork stuff. I don't understand it. I doubt if too many of you guys out there will understand it, not because you're not capable of understanding it, but it's not your thing, your field. Most of the people listening to me right now, I dare say, are probably not scientists or quantum physicists, because that's really what we're talking about here. But maybe you've heard news articles lately being mentioned about the God particle.
What's that?
I'm going to tell you. The CERN laboratory may have let slip its biggest breakthrough in a generation after appearing to announce the discovery of a new particle in an online video. It was first theorized in the 1960s by the Edinburgh-based physicist Peter Higgs, amongst others, and is credited for giving all other particles mass. That is the boson, or as they call it, the Higgs boson. Now we have... We got protons, neutrons. We have all kinds of atomic particles and molecules, and then the smaller elements and the smaller particles that make up atoms. But what is the smallest particle of matter in the entire universe? The absolute smallest particle. It is theorized and was by Dr. Higgs and others, that it is something called a boson, B-O-S-O-N. But, like many things in science, like many of the planets, for instance, that we theorized were out there, it's a theory. We didn't, for instance, a lot of the planets that we now know exist because we have photographic evidence, we didn't have any evidence of. It was theorized that these planets must exist. Why? Because scientists noticed certain gravitational forces at work. They noticed certain shifts in the orbit of other heavenly bodies that we did know existed. So they said, well, that cannot possibly be happening unless there is another heavenly body, another planet or planetoid out there that's making it happen. So it existed in theory. For instance, the planet Pluto, I think, was for a while theoretical.
They didn't know anything about Pluto? You're not talking about the dog.
Why did I know you were going to say that?
What are you, an idiot man, to talk about a planet? I know, but...
Why did I know that sooner or later, if I mentioned Pluto, you'd bring up the dog? So anyway, now we have the boson. And this is something that they theoretically have never... They theoretically believe exists, but no one's ever seen it, photographed it, nothing. Okay. In the short film accidentally published by the lab yesterday, spokesman Joe Incadella is seen describing how physicists at the Large Hadron Collider had observed a new particle. It came as scientists gathered in Geneva ahead of the most heavily anticipated announcement yet on the hunt for the Higgs boson, which takes place today. So what? I guess we've got to find out what happened at this meeting.
Did they come out? Did they get a picture of it and everything?
Well, they said that scientists observed this in this Large Hadron Collider, which I believe is a type of instrument, if you will, that can speed matter up. In any event, among the audience will be Peter Higgs himself, the Edinburgh professor who first proposed the existence of this mysterious particle almost 50 years ago. Rumors have been rife that scientists hunting the Higgs will announce a new discovery, and the video appeared to confirm the finding of a particle matching its description. Mr. Ikandela did not confirm the discovery of a Higgs. They're calling it a Higgs, but actually it's called a boson in the video, but was seen saying, "We've observed a new particle. We have quite strong evidence that there's something there." Nice going, Mr. Ikandela.
What a dumbass he is.
You can't really say, "Well, I don't want to confirm it," after you've opened your big fat yap, but I guess he wants the excitement to be at the meeting which took place today.
Well, we find out what happened in the meeting.
We should look that up, but we're too lazy. Now, somebody, you guys out there, you can look it up. We're giving you the background here. That's what I, you know. This is something that may in the end be one of the biggest discoveries or observations of any new phenomenon that we've had in our field of the last 30 to 40 years. Well, you know, and it's just simply validating or verifying that something exists that they thought theoretically might, but weren't sure. This very small, small particle. And frankly, it is so small, and it is so, what's the word? It's so intermittent in, its presence, theoretical or otherwise, that scientists have said it sort of is moving in and out of our reality. Now, that's not too crazy if you guys consider what's been going on in science here over the last several years as they study yet again the Big Bang and how the Big Bang took place. Now, I know you can believe in God, in my opinion, you can believe in God and believe this stuff.
Gee, that's the whole thing. I was talking to Robert, I'm talking to your aunt. She don't believe it.
Yeah, my aunt, she said it's a lot of cornball.
Cornball? Why don't you get Mavis on the line?
I don't know.
Now, my aunt, she said God made it, and that's all there is to it. You can talk about a Higgs boson and stuff like that.
Well, get her on the phone, man. Let's talk. You call her up, bud?
Yeah, what's the number?
I don't know what the number is. Ask him.
What's the number?
Let me go look for it.
So, anyway, the Higgs boson.
Okay, did that in your other pocket?
Yeah.
Will you guys be quiet while I'm doing this, please? So, anyway, this Higgs boson.
Is that it?
Yeah, here it is. 213.
Would you be quiet? I'm on the air here.
Oh, sorry.
The Higgs boson is this small particle of matter. Now, there is also, there's all kinds of theory. For instance, I'll give you an example. There's a theory about black matter.
Black adder?
Black matter, not black adder. Black matter. Black matter is what scientists believe exists outside of the known physical universe. So if you go way, 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 way out beyond the furthest, farthest star, you encounter just a deep space full of black matter. Why do they believe it's matter? Because there's something gravitationally pulling our universe apart. The universe from the Big Bang has been expanding, but it's expanding at an ever-increasing rate of speed. Generally, an explosion slows down. But this Big Bang explosion that we have been existing through, quite literally, since the beginning of known time, is speeding up. What would cause it to speed up? They think it's because surrounding our universe is a large mass of matter with a gravitational pull, and they call it black matter, or dark matter, excuse me, not black matter, dark matter, because you can't see it.
Well, yeah, you can't see it, it ain't there.
Well, you can say it's not there, but then why is everything expanding at an increasing rate of speed, see? So let's take a break here and come back and just take everything that I've just said and throw it into a garbage can, because I don't know what the hell it is I'm talking about. And we're going to have Robert's aunt Mavis on here in just a moment to talk a little bit more here about Higgs boson, the God particle, and extra-dimensional creatures, and black adder, and dark matter, and your mama too. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yay. Truth is our bitch. The Whee! Phil Hendry Show.
Whee!
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we've been talking here about all this scientific stuff, and we've got Mavis Leonard on the line, Robert's aunt. And Mavis, are you Robert said you're doing laundry?
I can't hear it.
Speak up.
Mavis, it's Phil Hendry.
Yes, sir. I hear you now. I couldn't hear you a minute ago.
You doing laundry?
Yeah, I'm doing some of Robert laundry. He comes home. You know, he has a security job. He got two different uniforms. And I don't want to get into but I got to scrub them. I got to scrub it out.
What do you want to tell people about that?
Robert, I don't want to talk to you. The man called me up. He wants to talk to me.
Yeah, I want to talk to your aunt briefly about something.
But I'm saying to you, Robert, when I have to do the laundry on your uniform, you know I've got to scrub and scrub away. And I don't want to...
You don't tell everybody about that.
Tell everybody about it because just again, they got me on the radio. And I'm up all hours of the night right now.
Well, what is your aunt doing up this late?
Just scrubbing out my pants.
Yeah, you gotta scrub out the bacon strips.
Got that right.
Oh, man. Why do you gotta tell everybody that?
All right, let's forget about that, okay?
But this boy, I tell you what, his mother and me were sisters. I love my sister so dearly, so very dearly. But when that boy came into the world, you know how much he weighed? He born.
You gotta tell everybody how much I weighed?
You know how much they'll take a guess?
I don't know.
How much you weigh when you was born?
How much did I weigh? I don't know.
Take a wild guess on how much. I guarantee you that Robert come in the world, I don't want to say anything. I know it's a family program, but he tore my sister up.
Man, you don't talk about my mama that way.
Let me tell you what, that was my sister. I love her dearly.
Okay, I get the picture. Was he a big baby?
A big baby? I can't. To this day, I don't really know how much he weighed. All I know is, man, he ripped her.
Okay, this is not why I called you up to talk to you about that.
Well, all right,
but, Man, my auntie, probably about 25 pounds.
Yeah, I think you got that right. I think he's about 25 pounds.
25 pounds? God!
That's what I've been trying to tell you. Big, fat kid. That's what he was, a big, fat kid. And he's still a big, fat kid.
All right, well, I wanted to ask you a question about the God particle, because Robert said that you had an opinion about that.
Yeah, I was reading about it in the newspaper this morning.
What do you think about that?
Hold on, I'm going to... Yeah. You know, this washing machine make a lot of noise. I think that that to say that they are going to discover God and all he is a little tiny particle, I think they're very wrong. God is bigger than all of us put together.
No, I understand that, dear, but...
Wait, hold on now. Don't you ask me a question. I'm going to give you an answer, because I believe this with all of my heart, that God is bigger than everything. He is larger and bigger, and there's a beautiful song, you know, How Big Is God? You know that song, How Big Is God?
Uh-oh.
I asked Mr. Henry. I didn't think, I already know you don't know, because I asked you that last week.
The song, How Big Is God? Is it a spiritual?
Yes, it is. How big is God? How big is God? You know, it goes like that. God is so big.
How big is God?
I'm going to tell you. God is so big that you can't even talk about it without it blowing your mind six different ways to sunset. And so for them to say that a thing called a God particle, I think it's very disrespectful to relegate God down to that.
Well, you know, they only call it the God particle because it's the best description of some little bit of matter that must exist at the very smallest, the smallest piece of matter must exist. Don't you agree with that?
I don't know. You're talking, I don't believe any of that. I don't believe it. I just believe this, that God made all of this. And if he wants to wipe it out, he can wipe it on out. He can destroy. He can turn it all into a pile of, you know what, doesn't matter to me, whatever God want to do.
You don't care about a God turning it all into a pile of dung?
I don't care if that's God's will. I learned to do God's will. And I tried to teach you that, too, after your mother died. After you ripped her apart. And she died.
Did she die in childbirth?
I believe she did die in childbirth, but Robert was 15 when she died.
Yeah, she thinks she died from a childbirth.
Wait a minute. She died in childbirth, but Robert was 15?
I think she gave birth to that boy for 15 years. That's how big and fat and just a big fat kid. Wow. Woo! Big fat kid.
All right. I'm sorry to bother you.
Yeah, I'm this is the time of night when I'm going to get a Henry Weinhardt and go down and look at Animal Planet.
Yeah, I'm going to find out on Animal Planet Puppy Bowl tonight.
You want a rerun on Puppy Bowl?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thanks very much, Mavis.
Uh-huh.
So you got your aunt into watching Animal Planet.
Yeah, she finally gave in, I said, when I showed her the Puppy Bowl, you know.
Are they still running that stupid thing?
Yeah, they do the Puppy Bowl every time there's a Super Bowl.
But, I mean, are they running it now?
Yeah, occasionally they'll still a Puppy Bowl rerun.
All right, well, that was a big, ridiculous...
What are you doing talking to her about the God particle? How does she want to talk about God?
True. So, anyway, that is the... although I'm always interested in knowing what people with a very strong religious belief, what their feelings are about this stuff that seems to, you know, invade the world of religion and science, man. They can't seem to exist together. They can't seem to coexist. And yet, one cannot exist without the other, you know.
Whatever that means.
Exactly. All right. Let me get into something else here. I thought maybe we would be able to find out what the result of that is. All right, Katie Holmes. Will the divorce of Katie Holmes divorcing Tom Cruise, is that going to hurt him at the box office? Ha, ha, ha! What a stupid thought. Why would that hurt him at the box office? Will Tom Cruise's bitter split hurt him at the box office? Katie isn't making him look good. This, according to the, some people in the know. No, she's not making him look good. If you buy the tabloid reports, Katie Holmes is seeking sole custody of 6-year-old Suri. In other words, this is not the boilerplate amicable split you see in Hollywood these days. But if you think that Katie's alleged bombshell will erode the tens of millions Cruise tends to make at the box office, you're mistaken, son. Boy, is that the truth. How do I know this is even a controversial topic? Maybe this is something this clown just came up with, whoever this simple-minded clown is that's writing for TMZ. Oh, it's Harvey Levin? Never mind. Anyway, believe it or not, Tom Cruise was once known more as a comedy or a rom-com type, comedy or a romantic comedy type, thanks to flicks like Jerry Maguire. But he's much more of an action star these days, best known as that guy bouncing off of skyscrapers in the Mission Impossible flicks. I don't think anybody, I don't even know who this guy's married to from one person to that. Who was he married to the last time?
He's married to I think he's married to, I forget.
I know who it was. It was Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, that's it.
He was married to Nicole Kidman. He's married to Katie Holmes. I mean, he's married to some of the, I guess would be considered to be one of the most desirable or eligible bachelorettes or whatever the hell you want to call it. I mean, the most beautiful. I'm surprised he hasn't married Julia Roberts. Something like she married?
Who?
Julia Roberts. Ain't she married?
I don't know. I don't think she is. I think she's a lesbian.
Oh, get out of here.
What?
What are you talking about?
Well, she's not married. I ain't heard about her being married.
She's married, man. I just don't know who the hell she's married to. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show in our News and Information Hour. And coming up in our News and Information Hour, more on Andy Griffith, God rest his soul, and some financial news from Wall Street and beyond, and the fallout coming from this guy Diamond, and pressures mounting over Barclays, and just a whole lot of crap that we will make very simple for you. Don't worry about it. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Oh, and Chris Brown's album sucks.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show. Now, what do I got there, bud?
That's the New York Times.
Right. I've got these discs that, as you guys know, are some of my most prized possessions. They were given to me as a gift by my good friend Brian Glicklick, who bought me the front pages of the New York Times on CD-ROM going back to 1851. Now, the reason why I busted this out is because tomorrow's the 4th of July. See? So I'm looking for the 4th of July, 1860. Why did I pick out 1860? Well, I had the disc 1851 to the end of the century, and I thought, well, that's the most interesting year because that's when the Civil War was only a year away. So I'm going to go to June.
That's when the 4th of July is?
No, it's in July. Why am I going to June? Sorry, bud. See, if I don't do it right, Bud's going to get flipped out.
Yeah, you're going to get all confused, man. I know what it was.
Really? All right, here's July. Let's go to July the 4th, July 2nd, 3rd, 4th, New York Times, July 4th, 1860. And what is the headline going to say here? It's going to say what? A new law of contacts for military and naval supplies. Our national anniversary. City celebrates city celebration of the 4th, arrangements for the military and civic display. Fireworks, excursions, etc. Today, the 84th anniversary of our national independence will be celebrated throughout the country, but nowhere probably with more enthusiasm than in the metropolis.
That was what they called where Batman lived, right? Or not him, but Superman.
Well, that might have been where Superman lived, but that's New York, okay?
What's metropolis?
New York! Will you guys forget about Superman for 5 seconds, man? This is 1860. Superman wasn't around then.
Bound to be bitching if he was, though.
Yeah, I guess, whatever. I mean, you know.
Yeah, think I would change the book and stuff.
Yeah. Ma and Pa, can I?
I wonder if they'd be Quakers.
Never mind about what the country had looked like as Superman came in the 1860s. By the way, why didn't he? Would have been a lot better. Anyway. The almost continuous noise of exploding fireworks during the past few days, the flaming handbills of the pyrotechnists, the multifarious excursions advertised, and the extensive transportation of fireworks by overloaded fond parents having an eye to young America have already given us a foretaste of the celebration that is to take place today. Look at that, man. Fireworks were really big back then already. And they're talking about parents bringing fireworks to their kids. Now, look at those words that they use that people, newspaper readers in those days, understood.
But use a word like that.
Multifarious?
Yeah.
Because, really, the only people that read newspapers back then were people that were interested in business. I told you, when the New York World was finally published, which was, it was being published at this time, but still the New York Times was the big paper in town. It was the first newspaper to just publish a bunch of exploitive, tabloidy things. Murder, suicide, incest, this, that. And you might say it was the first newspaper to appeal to the middle class or people who were just into sensational stuff. In other words, people that didn't know what the word multifarious meant.
Right.
So, but while those newspapers were being printed and being read, there were the traditional newspaper readers who had been reading what were traditional newspapers up to that point. They had a lot of shipping news, they had a lot of business news, they had a lot of political news, there was nothing flashy, it was all just the facts, give me the facts. So people that read newspapers, those kinds of newspapers, tended to be maybe, you know, a little more educated. They certainly knew the big words and all that stuff, okay?
Yeah, but I mean, don't they have nothing in there about incest and stuff?
Not in the New York Times. Not the New York Times, from the day it was founded until today, has always prided itself on being a newspaper of record. That means that they are the official sort of organ. Don't laugh, bud.
Mm-hmm.
What a baby.
Every time, man. You can't let it go.
He said organ.
So what if I said organ? God, man, let it. It's like Robert said, let it go. So the New York Times is a paper of record. They're the official paper of record, and so they would always be very official and nothing that even hinted of scandal. Even today, if you read the New York Times, they refer to everyone as Mr. All their male, the people that they're reporting on who are men, it's always Mr. Hendry or Mr. Dickman.
Did they have you guys in the paper?
No, man. I'm using it as an example.
When?
When what?
When they said Mr. Dickman.
They never did, man, as far as I know. In fact, I don't think they ever will at the rate you're going. So here you have, though, stories of the 4th of July in 1860, and our country was not too far away from a devastating civil war. Can you imagine that, a civil war, and you're celebrating the 4th of July, and you're probably wondering, God almighty, what are we going to do? What have we done to our country, you know? And this was also a presidential election season. So you can see over here, William Seward, who went on to become the Secretary of State. He was attacked the night that Lincoln was shot in his bed. He was recovering from a carriage accident where he'd been thrown and had fractured his skull, and he was already a very sick man, and busting into his home and running up the stairs past the servants and the house staff was Lewis Powell, who began slashing at him with a knife, almost killed the man, but somehow he survived. That was the William Seward that was campaigning here in this particular newspaper, and Lincoln recognized William Seward as a great politician, as a great man, and made him the Secretary of State. He was his rival in the campaign. Here's a story, letter from the Honorable James A. Hamilton on the doctrine of the Constitution concerning slavery.
Got to read that.
I'm not going to read it on the air right now, but that was the big question. And it bedeviled the country during those days, and they're even quoting here this guy, Justice Taney. He was the top judge in the court, and they had a thing called the Dred Scott case. You know about that, Robert?
Yeah, Dred Scott was a slave.
Yes, and Dred Scott, basically, as a slave, said the following thing. He said, I'm a slave, but I was taken by my owner, basically, into a free state. And once he traveled with me into that free state, I became a free man. And he sued.
What do you mean he sued?
Dred Scott sued. Dred Scott sued. He had, an attorney. Obviously, became a case of such significance and interest that lawyers handled this for him. But he basically sued, saying, "I deserve my freedom because once I am in a free state, I'm a free man." Now, this went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled in the Dred Scott case that no, he was not. It was the right of property. And according to Justice Taney, the right of property in a slave is distinctly and expressly affirmed in the Constitution. That's what his interpretation of the Constitution was. Now, you can imagine, this is 1860. This is how people, this is something that today we would never think, but this is the way people thought then, okay? And as I always say to you guys, if it wasn't for those people thinking that way, you and I would not be thinking in the more enlightened way that we do today. It isn't to say that aren't we so much better than those people. No, because we learn from them. We learn from them. They taught us. They taught all succeeding generations on the right and the wrong way to think about things. So there you go.
So that guy said a man's property no matter where he goes.
Yeah, that you are property. If you belong to a guy, then you belong to that guy no matter where he goes. Exactly. Well, what happened to Dred Scott? It had a happy ending, sort of. Dred Scott was returned to the state where his enslavement existed, but his freedom was purchased by a group of Northerners, and he was eventually freed.
He became free.
Yes. But still, I mean, he had to have his freedom purchased, and the constitutional principle that we now live by, which is that no man owns any other man, it continued. And, of course, the country went into war. But, I mean, there was no way that I don't see if this guy Taney had said, no, he's a free man. We were on our way to a civil war anyway, so it didn't much matter what anybody said back then.
Yeah, but if he would have said that man's a free man, there might not have been no civil war.
No, bullcrap. That would have made it even worse.
Yeah, because the Southern's going to make a war.
Oh. Yeah, oh. Oh is right. If anything, you would have thought that if Taney's saying that, it would have made the South say, okay, it's all cool, let's not go to war because, the Supreme Court just upheld our slave rights. But they were too far gone, and they were too stupid, too. I mean, the Southerners, God bless them, what I'm saying is, They had no way they were going to win that freaking war if you took a look at what they were up against in terms of the ability of the North to arm. I just saw a thing today, man, where it was almost like America going into World War II. What the hell was the South thinking? I mean, there was no way they were going to win that war with all of the industrial manufacturing capability up here. Up in here, you know. All right, world-famous Phil Henry Show online at philhenryshow.com, where you can get live streaming video of the show and thousands of hours of archived material and just everything that your little heart desires when it comes to the Phil Henry Show. And now added tonight in our shop is the best of Ted Bell, the very first best of compendium, album, assortment, whatever the hell you want to call it, of an individual guest ever in the history of our show. And it is there in our shop, the best of Ted Bell. Pick it up and share it around and pass it around and put it on the Underground Railroad and give it to your runaway slaves so he can take it north to Canada. Whatever the hell. It's there in the shop at philhenryshow.com. Also, check out our podcast, episode 14 of the Phil Henry Show, the free Phil Henry Show podcast, coming up on Thursday. We'll be right back here. It is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Shut up! My name's Brett Stott. Shut up! My name's...
For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our final segment tomorrow, well, today is the 4th of July, so happy 4th of July.
Yeah, that's right.
This is the 4th, and it's been the 4th back east. It's the 4th here on the west. So it's the 4th, man. There's no getting around it. It ain't the 3rd, it ain't the 2nd, it's the 4th. 4th of July, and so we hope you have a happy 4th. What do you think is going to be going around at the El Pacifico, man?
Man, there's going to be a lot of fireworks out here, that's for sure.
We always get a great fireworks display here at the El Pacifico because it's just that kind of a neighborhood. And now here's a story that I you know, it may be a little bit of a warning. In the tinder dry U.S. West, you know, we've had fires out west in Colorado. We've had some in California, and as I remember, there wasn't a whole lot of rain. Fire sucks. Fire exists. Fire, man, we get fire out here. And, you know, people get, you know, like down south, they get hurricanes, and they pretty much get those nor'easters and hurricanes along the eastern seaboard, and they get that smothering heat. Out here, fires. In the tinder dry U.S. West, where campfires, fireworks, and even lit cigarettes are banned across public lands, another fire-starting culprit remains free of most restrictions. This, according to the AP, guns. I haven't made any judgment yet.
Man, they're trying to ban people from having guns.
Well, hold on. This year, officials believe target shooting or other firearms use have sparked at least 21 wildfires in Utah and nearly a dozen in Idaho. Shooting is also believed to have caused fires in Arizona, Nevada, and New Mexico. Officials have been asking the public to scale back shooting as legions of firefighters contend with one of the busiest, most destructive wildfire seasons to ever hit the West. But many in the region, avid proponents of the Second Amendment right to bear arms, so most state lawmakers are hesitant to enact any formal restrictions. Well, look, if you're I'm a gun owner, and there are gun owners, and you say to me, using your long gun or your target shooting or whatever, man, out in the wild is going to cause fires, I'm going to scale it back. Don't be stupid. If that's what the fire people are saying. What do you mean, enact a law? I mean, there shouldn't have to be a law enacted. But unfortunately, guns, like everything else that's legal, there's some people, man, that are real dumb when it comes to the way they're using those. These guys...
I don't get what's going to cause a fire?
Well, I mean, you're talking about the use of gunpowder. You're talking about bullets traveling at a hypersonic rate that are hitting rocks that cause sparks. You know.
But so that's going to cause a fire?
Yeah. Hot lead, man. Look, if you take a piece of metal that's hot enough and you throw it into some weeds, it's going to definitely trigger some kind of trigger some kind of an ignition. If the brush is dry enough, man, you heard what Jeff Dowder said. Didn't you hear that whole, the rabbit thing?
That guy's nuts talking about a rabbit.
Well, he was talking about rabbits throwing off those sparks, man. Get him on the phone, will you?
I don't know if he's awake.
Get him on the phone. If he's awake, he's awake. Don't worry about it. It was Dowder. In fact, we had him on the podcast not too long ago saying that it was rabbits running through the high weeds in the dry foothills that were causing a lot of the fires. Hey, Jeff, you there?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're on the air with us.
Oh, okay. I
woke him up.
We woke you up, huh?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, can you give it to me again about the jackrabbits causing fires?
Well, I mean, I had talk about that. You know, I talked about that a couple of times, and people was making fun of me. But the fact is, they're jackrabbits that, you know, haul ass pretty fast, and they have fur, and if it's dry enough, the fur will touch off a weed because of the static electricity.
Okay, that's it. Static electricity.
What's that?
Who's that, Dickman?
Yeah.
Hey, what do you mean, what's that? It's like the time you had that balloon and it stuck to you?
Well, I mean, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the time you had that balloon and it stuck to your head, remember?
Man, you ain't going to make no sense, these two guys.
Why don't you let us in on this?
Well, one time, all it was is Dickman was talking about, he was laughing about it. He had a balloon stuck to his face. And he goes, ha, 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 and all that. I go, yeah, it's because of static electricity. And he's like,
I said you're lying.
Well, okay, what's your explanation?
What is your explanation, bud?
The balloon was stuck to my face.
Yes, but why was the balloon stuck to your face?
I don't know.
Okay, so you don't have no explanation, man. I was giving you an explanation.
Yeah, well, you're saying electricity.
No, man, I'm saying static electricity. And that's what made the balloon stick to your face. And remember when you were walking around, it was stuck to your crotch, and you're all, look at the balloon on my crotch.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah? Well, what do you think made it stick to it? Why, you think the balloon fell into your junk?
What?
All right, let's grow up, okay?
Well, I mean, he's so stupid, he doesn't... But that was static electricity. So if the rabbits have it on their fur, and they're traveling at a very high rate of speed through the low brushlands...
What do you mean low brushlands? Where are we talking about here?
We're talking about the foothills, where most of these that's what I call them, jacked up rabbits, because they are. If you've ever seen them, they're all messed up.
You what? Call them messed up rabbits.
I'm not going to call them messed up. They're jacked rabbits, but... So anyway, and they go through the weeds at a very, incredible clip, and the static electricity will set off a spark. And many times that will trigger like a fire. And that's been the theory that they proposed at a meeting of, well, they didn't really have a meeting, but it sounded good. But, I mean, it was a theory proposed. Well, it was a meeting. It was me, Jim Rudolph, and Terry Neglin. Both those guys worked with the Forestry Service.
And, well, what do you mean you had a meeting?
Well, I mean, we were spoken of. A fatty, and they were telling me about it.
Okay, so we've gone from having a meeting of Forestry Service guys to you're just sitting around smoking a joint, and you're coming up with a rabbit with static electricity.
Well, I mean, I didn't come up with a rabbit with static electricity. I mean, Dickman knows. He had a balloon, attached to his thing. So
that's got nothing to do with anything, and it doesn't prove that rabbits are... Okay, listen, Jeff, I'm sorry I woke you up, okay?
Well, I mean, I was just trying...
Thank you very much, Bud. You better sit down and figure out, if you tell people they're wrong about stuff, like you often do, then you better have an alternative,
What do you mean?
I mean, if you're going to tell a guy there's no such thing as static electricity, you don't know what the hell it is, then you tell me why it is you're walking around with a balloon stuck to your crotch. World Famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by myself, Dan Northcraft, and Neil West. And, of course, the Phil Hendry Show is online as well at philhendryshow.com, where you can pick up a backstage pass and get yourself live streaming video of our show each and every night, as well as thousands of hours of archived material. And don't forget, the best of Ted Bell is now in our shop, baby, in time for the 4th of July. All right, we will catch you guys on Thursday night. Have a beautiful, beautiful 4th, man. Have a safe 4th, but by all means, party hardy, and we will see you later. Let that be a lesson to you. Thanks.
Phil Hendry.